This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
This is Scott from California. When I'm not hiking at national parks, I'm stacking Benjamins.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and printers all over are cranking out invitations again for live weddings with actual guests. And if you decide to go out again, how do you make a splash without breaking the bank? Today, we'll ask a woman who should know because she's the mind behind the Couple Money podcast, Elle Martinez. And from this podcast, it's OG. And from LenPenzo.com, it's the Wedding Crashers. Nah, I'm just kidding. I think they're still crashing Jane Seymour's party. It's just Len Penzo. Hey, kids, how about winning some Benjamins with your super money knowledge? We'll talk to Terry Williams from One United Bank about their I Got Bank financial literacy contest on today's show. Later, we'll magnify John's money, who has a son who made a killing on Dogecoin. What does the roundtable think about crypto investing? And I'll keep the roundtable on their toes with my trivia question. And now, a guy who won't be able to crash a wedding if he doesn't get invited to one, it's Joe Saucihot.
Isn't that the point of crashing a wedding? Was it you weren't invited, Doug, and you crashed it? Hey, everybody. Welcome to Understanding the Script for the Win podcast. I'm Joe Saucihot, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And what a weekend opener we have for you, because we've got a wild and crazy bunch here with us. Let's start off across the card table from me where Mr. OG's hanging out. How are you, man?
Happy Friday.
I'm so happy it's Friday.
I got my papers. You hear my papers?
You do.
I got my notes. I'm ready to rock and roll.
Like you're in it to win it today.
Yes, I am.
Like 9 years of podcasting and he finally brings notes. Good work. It's good.
Well, they're not notes about the show. They're just...
travel plans.
It's exactly. It's the dinner menu for tonight and also what I'm doing when we get done recording.
And the guy who's already done recording in his brain, deep under Los Angeles, Mr. Len Penzo's back.
Joe, how are you, my friend?
I am fantastic hanging out with you, buddy. How's the train set coming?
The train set? It's coming along. I've built three buildings. I've built an electrical substation. I'm sharing a lot. It's on trainboard.com if you want to see it.
We'll link to it. We will link to it.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Link to it. Oh, yeah. Please do. Yeah. Everybody can see how I'm doing on my choo-choo. It's coming along really well.
It sounds like a full-time job, Len. I'm just saying.
It is. I'll admit, this weekend I spent 16 hours in that room building...
That's dedication.
Hey, I'm doing good too.
It's something, Len. L. It's a sickness almost, I think.
I'm doing good too, Len. I'm doing good too.
I know, G.
Oh, okay. I mean, you didn't.
Love you, bro.
You didn't
love
say you. Anything to me. So
I love you. Guys, I got to introduce a special guest. You guys can hug it out later. Let's introduce the guest here to carry the show because you two dorks can't. From Couple Money, it's Elle Martinez back with us.
Hey, I'm excited about this. I love to talk about these topics. And
we thought couples at the beginning of being a couple, who would know about that? It's got to be Elle.
Yeah, I've been there. Going to be 15 years this year and been a guest on quite a few. So Yeah, weddings are something to celebrate, but yeah, it can hit the wallet hard.
Oh, it hits the wallet so hard. But before we get into that, because we are going to dig in and we're going to lean on that experience that you have, tell the three people that don't know about Couple Money about the show, because I don't know, I have fun taking you out on my runs. It's probably one of the most just, you have so much attention to production. It is just such a well-produced show.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, with Couple Money, I think the name says it all. It's helping couples get on the same page with not just their finances, but with their goals. And with the podcast this year, I'm excited. We've expanded a little bit, not just marriage and money, but we talk about this year more about travel, looking at houses and financial independence and freedom. So it's that intersection of love and money and having fun with it. I think that's not discussed enough. Actually enjoying the journey and the process together.
When you said the name says it all, I'm like, oh, and I thought it was so cryptic. Couple Money. I didn't have any idea.
Well, there you go. I tried for Married Money, but the domain was taken. So, you know,
I like Couple Money.
I had to move lateral.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we got L here. We've got OG. We got Len. Let's get this party started. But first, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. All right, we're going to talk weddings today, so let's move.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our stacking Benjamin's headlines.
Well, this piece is pretty timeless. It's by Anne Freeman, and it actually, in full disclosure, came out a few years ago. But I don't know, I find myself continually going back to it because of the fact that it really hits the nail on the head, no matter what year it is. I remember just after I got out of college going to so many weddings, and just, I had no money. I'm invited to like 50 weddings, and it just took my horrible financial situation and made it even worse. So this piece comes to us from moneycrashers.com, and it's written by Amy Freeman. And it talks about a few things. It talks about budgeting for weddings. It talks about how to cut costs for wedding essentials, which we'll get into each one of these, including the outfit, the gift, transportation, lodging, and then saving money if you're in the wedding, and then finally picking which ones to attend. So let's start off in general, budgeting for the wedding. Elle is the guest. We'll have you go first here if you don't mind. How much money do you budget for a wedding? How do you know how much to budget for a wedding?
This is so tricky because this is definitely playing in the emotions. The special day, you guys are starting your journey together, and everyone is going to be different on how they approach this, but I feel like couples should sit down and talk about realistically, first of all, what do they want out of their budget? When they say, you know, my wedding day, what are you imagining? And then talk about, okay, well, what do we have and what's the budget? So in the situation with my husband and I, at that time, he just wrapped up college. He was a new grad, first job, and I was starting my senior year. So you can imagine what our budget was.
$4.
You know what? You were close. If this was a trivia question, you're pretty close. No, actually, we were fortunate. Our parents wanted to help out with the wedding, but still, we talked about what we wanted, guest size with the budget and ballpark. I want to say it was around 8,150 people. And we had people from all around the country coming. We come from big families. So it took a lot of conversations. And it also is interesting, a wedding is supposed to be about the couple, but a lot of times families involved.
Sure.
If they're contributing with the finances, so that's another conversation to have. But yeah, I was reading that article and I could not believe what the average amount was, $30,000. Okay. I feel, I don't think you should go into debt for your wedding.
No,
I feel like this is going to start off your marriage on the on the wrong foot. And since money is such a huge, huge deal when it comes to fights, I think if you can get your wedding right, you're off to a great start.
On the other hand, looking at going to other people's weddings, I got invited to a wedding this year, Len, for the first time in, I don't know, it's going to be 5 years. I'm pretty excited about it. But of course, I'm in Texas. The wedding's in Michigan. Do you keep some type of a travel fund? Do you keep some type of a travel budget that, okay, now instead of going on vacation, I'm going to my niece's wedding?
Well, not anymore. You know, you get to be an old guy like me who's been around and who can afford that. Not anymore. But when we were younger, yes, we had an entertainment. I mean, going back to, say, when I was being late 20s, I had an entertainment portion of my budget, and that was part of the entertainment budget. And when that was gone, that was gone. And if I didn't have it, you know, I send my regrets, you know, but you really? Know, if I could, I'd so, yeah. So and maybe a wiener schnitzel, maybe a wiener schnitzel coupon for good luck for them for, you know, put that in the regrets RS the card. But no, yeah, that's, you know, you do the best you can.
There were weddings that you didn't attend that were of friends because you couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, that's difficult. Oh, gee, how about you?
I was just thinking about like the timing of life and when all that happens. You know, you just said that you just got your first wedding invite in 5 years. And we just got one too, actually, as a matter of fact. But it was one for scheduled for last year that got canceled.
Yes.
So now this was just kind of like they got married anyway, did the whole court thing, but then they're doing the party here in a couple of weeks. I was thinking, gosh, it's been so long since we've got a wedding invitation. Either we're terrible wedding guests or that's just a different stage of life. And so when do you get all of the wedding invitations? When you're like in your 20s and early 30s and you don't have any money. And like Len said, now you're like, yeah, I'll go if I want because I'm a gazillionaire, just like Forrest Gump would say. But when this affects you is early on. It affects you when you're at the stage when you don't have the money to be able to go. That's when everybody gets married. So
let's talk.
It's kind of a funky time.
Yeah, and especially when you're like right out of college too.
Right. I mean,
because a lot of your friends have spread out, right? And so most of the weddings are across the country or you know, halfway across the country. It's not like, you know, your local group of friends. It's, yeah, you're exactly right, OG.
Say that again.
What?
Oh, you said something about being exactly.
Oh, right. I know what I purposely forgot.
Okay. We'll fix it in post.
It's funny, guys, because I've really despised the last year of all the Zoom fun that we had, you know, getting the family together on Zoom. But I think that if we could have had Zoom weddings when I was in my 20s, that would have been so great. And I'm the attendee that leaves his camera off, you know.
And we just did that. We did that last year, Joe. We actually the honeybees. Yes. Sister had got married and it was on Zoom.
Oh, that's great. Yeah,
'cause this was during the COVID, right? And this was, you know, all done over Zoom.
Wow.
Yeah, we attended a Zoom wedding as well. It was so less stressful, especially with two kids in tow. It was like, you guys can be in the other room. Don't worry.
Leave your microphone off. Did you really?
Yeah. Dress up a little bit.
See, I would put on a nice shirt that they could see. And then keep the sweatpants on.
Well, I have my go-to summer dress, so, you got to have your go-to outfits for special occasions.
But it is doable. It works.
Well, and Elle talks about her go-to summer dress. And when it talks about attending a wedding, right? So we're getting ready to go to this wedding. And Cheryl says, literally yesterday, that I haven't been to one of these things in forever. I haven't had to dress up in a long time. She's like, do you even have any clothes to wear to this stuff? Like, well, yeah, I actually have like one outfit that I can probably wear. So I'm going to get by it. But you know, Elle, it's completely different. And the piece talks about this. It's completely different for women, right? So Affording the outfit, how do you come up with the budget to look at the outfit and where do you cut corners there?
So I thought it was an interesting suggestion where they're saying keep it a neutral color. And then your accessories, you mix it up.
Just go with a white dress. Like,
oh, I feel like you're just asking for a fight at a wedding. Don't go there. Or, you know, got to be careful with what you wear. It's coded. Everything's coded. No,
I went to a wedding, Elle, not to cut you off. Yeah. I'm sorry, but I went to a wedding where the mother of the groom wore white and you could just see that there was going to be problems.
Yeah. Hopefully They're
was
still
it, was it before was it before Memorial Day? Is that, was that was why it was
double? Was it a double offense?
Who knows?
But anyway, May 15th, for God's sake.
But anyway, Elle, you said you thought it was interesting. They said to wear neutral.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I have outfits based on the season. I don't have a huge closet, but I have my, you know, the summer, the spring. I live in North Carolina, so literally it doesn't matter what season you're in. It can start off winter and end up in summer by the afternoon. So I've mastered switching out on that. But I love the idea with the accessories, because then you can coordinate it with the wedding. If you know the wedding colors are going to be purple, you have a little accessory over here. Looks like you did it just for the wedding, but nope. It's just your go-to piece, and it's very affordable, especially if you have multiple weddings in the same year.
I also know, I like the suggestion here for Rent the Runway. I know that when my daughter was in high school and in college, she used Rent the Runway. And what was always really fun for me as a frugal dad, even though she paid for it herself, was that she got the message that she could look great. Like, she would look phenomenal, and her dress was a fraction of the price that everybody else's dress was, because she was sending it back the next day. It was a fantastic way to go. Len, do you worry about wearing neutral to the wedding?
No, but that's a fantastic idea. I mean, you know, especially if you're a guy, I mean, you have these weird bright pink or chartreuse or powder blue outfits, you know, it's like, where else are you going to wear that? So no, I think that renting's a great idea.
Yeah. And it is true here that says you can wear, if you're a guy, you can generally wear the same thing to wedding after wedding and nobody's going to bat an eye. I got very lucky.
No one's noticing. Yeah,
why is that? But why is that? You notice that? It's if two women show up in the same thing, it's a disaster. If two guys show up in the same thing,
we high five each other.
Yeah, we do. We compliment each other for dress, you know, having the same taste.
Like, great.
You're wearing jeans too?
Yes. Flip-flops. Both of us. Number two on this list is the gift. And I think we can probably spend some time here, but let's talk about some innovative gifts when it comes to somebody's wedding. OG, how about you?
I'm a bad person for this. I'm a check writer. Yeah, I'm just a check. Here's some money.
I love that. That sounds great.
Yeah, it's easy. It almost is like a cop out. You know, like, oh crap, the wedding's tomorrow. We'll just give them some money. That's fine. You know, when we got married, we got a whole bunch of crap. You know, Len, you were talking about your anniversary coming up and all the stuff that you still have, but how much stuff didn't you keep, you know, or what was just, you know, when do you need a China silver, you know, serving bowl that you use four times in 25 years, you know, like that stuff, people like to give that stuff. But when I was 24 and getting married, we needed the money, you know, we had to get an apartment and move our stuff and all that sort of thing. So I think some of it has a little bit to do with the timing of it as well. I don't think you have to go crazy with it either, you know,
with the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of it depends on your relationship, of course, but I don't think you want to come without a gift. That would be, that's bad form.
L.
Yeah. I actually love the idea of giving money. I don't know any couple getting married. A lot of times they're getting married or they're buying a house. Like, it happens very quickly. There's multiple things. So having that money that they can put into savings, either paying off the wedding or if they're going to buy a house in a few years, that's a huge help. I think that's fantastic. I also, for our wedding, I thought was great was we had some very talented friends offer us a wedding gift to help us out. So my husband's grandparents, his grandmother and aunts were caterers. And so they did the wedding cake.
Oh, that's
great. They offered to do that. So that was custom. That was a huge financial help. But then it also was sentimental. It was a connection with that. And then we had another friend who is more than an interior designer. She handles a lot of stuff with new construction and builds and everything. And she also is just very design oriented, did flowers. I have allergies. So we went with the
silks.
I don't want to say. Yeah, the silks, yeah. Fake flowers, but they were really nice. And I still have the bouquet from them. She did a fantastic job. So I think looking for those opportunities where you know you have a talent and at least offer. If they say no, they say no. I think that was a great connection. And then one time when I was a bridesmaid, I made a custom mead. So I homebrew on occasion. And I wanted to do a honey wine or a mead that reflected the couple. So it was something unique. And I did get something off the registry as well. I feel like if they put something on the registry, don't try to be funny and get something else.
Yeah.
That's a little annoying. So I got something there and then I got something personal. And I felt like it was a good mix and it didn't break the budget.
What if we, Ochi, the next wedding we get invited to do that connection, we podcast their wedding?
Ooh.
Send them some t-shirts. I know you didn't ask for these, but they're awesome.
We're standing up right behind everybody. Okay, here comes the bride. All right. We got the gentleman over there.
That's a 7 out of 10 on the dress.
I mean, this would be great. You guys could have the wedding information in the front and then your brand in the back. There you go.
Have Doug do the announcements.
That'd be so bad. So bad.
And now, Susan!
Who needs music when you do that? Len, the gift?
I will say, probably if you're looking, this is a great idea. So everybody, you go ahead and use this. So this is one of, I have my blog post out of the right now that's the 7 modest wedding gifts that I'm still enjoying 25 years later. And this is one of the 7. And it is inexpensive. It's really very special. And I think a lot of you guys should steal this idea because it's an awesome gift. My friends, Kyle and Annie, what they did is they made a shadow box with our wedding invitation and some other mementos that kind of the honeybee and myself. And they put them in that. It's nothing big at all. It's very small. We proudly have it on display to this day. It's still obviously it's relevant and we love it and we get joy from it every single day to this day. And I bet you the whole thing, I mean, it's just very modestly cost, but it's not about how much money. It has nothing to do with it. In this article I wrote, if you look at these gifts that we still have and we're still enjoying 25 years, 6 of them are very, very, anybody can buy them and they're very special gifts. So anyways, that's fantastic.
Customized
my shadow box.
That's great. My cousin did that for us. It didn't have everything else. It was just, they just framed the invitation. So the front of the invitation, then they cut it and they must have had 2 invitations because then they had the inside next to it. And it was fantastic. And we still have it. And you're right. I mean, at Michael's, that frame costs nothing.
Yep. And the thing is, it's, you say, well, that's just a frame, but it's not really. It's in a shadow box. It's how you, it's the presentation. Yeah, it's how they present it. Yeah. So it is personal.
Yes.
And you think of the people who gave it to you. So, I mean, it's a great gift and it's very inexpensive.
Now, gifts, by the way, that you didn't like, I want to do this just very, very quickly. Or gifts that you thought that you would like, and I'll kick this one off. I thought for sure that the fondue pot, we were going to have fun with that over and over and over. We had our estate sale last year. I think I used that thing in 27 years. I used it once. The fondue thing, just bringing that out at home, never happened. But the griddle, there was a griddle that you just put on your stovetop and do sausages on or pancakes or whatever. I used the crap out of that. And I remember opening that going, why does Aunt Marie think I need a griddle? And that griddle, amazing, just incredible. Len, bad gift. Or a gift that
you're going to get me in trouble. hopefully the people that gave this to me either passed away or
hopefully they're dead
or they don't listen to the show.
Hold on a second.
I guess I'd have to say it's the Mr. T.
The Mr. T.
The Mr. T tea maker.
Oh,
which we never used.
Oh,
you make sun tea. I mean, a jar in the sun is better than this Mr. T thing.
Yeah.
Boy, I sure hope they passed away. I
sure hope those people are dead.
Like from the 18 Mr. T, or is it just like a general like Mr.
No, Mr. Like T-E-A.
Mr.
T, that'd have been a great person to.
I'm literally thinking 18. I'm like, they had those out there.
Man, I put it in the who does like tea at my job.
It's the opposite of Mr. Coffee. It's Mr. T.
Should have been here last week when we talked about Mr. T. It was his birthday a week ago. We had a whole Mr. T thing going. L, bad gift, gift that just didn't give.
Okay, so I don't want to get in trouble too. I know this person's alive and I love him. But there's a reason we put something on our list. Like we were very specific. We said, you know what? We're not going to have a huge registry, but we want things that we know we're going to enjoy. And if you know me, one of the things I don't like is the color red. It's just weird. I'm more of a blue-green person. Everything in our registry was blue. And this person just brought this, not on the registry, this item. It was red. And I'm like, hey, it's going to go with nothing. It's like, where did you get this? So I still love them. I love them. They confuse me with my mom. My mom is like, she loves red. She's addicted to red.
Oh.
She tried to get us to do the wedding in red. And I was like, no, we're not. Not going to do that. But the biggest surprise gift, I will say, is the slow cooker. I guess now would be Instant Pot. But like that is the most used and loved gift we had. I mean, we had for over 10 years till it broke because we used it so much.
Ours was a similar gift that we used heck out of that I also didn't understand at the time was a vegetable steamer. I was like, I don't know if I want a vegetable steamer. And oh, man, that thing is it's so beat up. And we and I think this is our second one. And it's horrible. Oh, gee. Anything?
I have no recollections of any of our gifts or anything whatsoever. No, I mean, but we got a lot of the junk. I mean, again, we were 24 and 21 or 22, like when we registered for our stuff.
I thought you were going to say we were 24 and 15. No.
Okay. It's a little weird.
Sorry. I just read a thing last night that one of the states, I don't remember which state, just increase the age for you to get married from 14 to 16. What the hell?
I couldn't even tell you who my favorite Backstreet Boy was. I don't know. I mean, seriously.
All right. So that took a weird turn. We're just going to try to just yank the wheel back, right? Just we're in the ditch and just sometimes you just got to power through it. Just overcorrect the other way. Let's get on the road.
Okay.
What I was going to say before whatever happened there was we did the same stuff. You go through the, you know, do the registry and it's cool. And you get like, I need a spatula and I need knives and I need like all that sort of stuff. But then there's like Elle said, like, I might like this, or like Glenn said, I might like tea. So I should get it just in case. And I think we went overboard on all the stuff.
Yeah.
And ended up with a bunch of like useless things, just like you were talking about, Joe, where you're like, what the hell am I going to do with two griddles or four crock pots and that sort of thing? So
you pass it off to the next wedding you're invited to.
Yeah. Or birthday party. Yes. A bread maker. Yeah.
But wait a minute. They're 11 and you're giving them a bread maker.
Like an old school. Yeah. So I don't really remember much from our wedding at all, other than it was very over the top.
Number three here, transportation. When you're thinking about going across the USA, of course, I'm going from Texas to Michigan for this one. A way that I cut costs for this is to combine other things and seeing other people. Mm-hmm. So instead of just going to the wedding, Cheryl and I are making it a little summer week-long trip. So we get a few things done in one fell swoop instead of just there and back. Thoughts on reducing cost, Elle?
Yeah, I kind of like to make it a trip as well, an event. With the exception of a wedding in Denver, we drive. Yeah. Which depending on how, you know, how far away that is, kind of an adventure. And then I'd like the idea about Airbnb. We split a house when we were in Denver. We had some family, my cousin, my mom, my sister, and it was a big enough house. We each had our own section. And the portion we paid for almost a week there in Denver was less than the price of one night at the hotel that they had. Wow. For the wedding. Yeah. Downtown.
Wow. Yeah. We did something similar for my son's graduation. We got a house where everybody could stay and it made it really fun. It was great. Everybody had their own little area. And then we had a nice big kitchen living room where we all congregated. That was good. Len, how about you?
Yeah, I think you've nailed most of the ones that make the most sense. Short of, you know, moving to Salina, Kansas, and then that way you're in the dead center of the country and you have it's the least amount of distance, no matter where you know, us poor folks on the coast, like Elle and myself, we're those East Coast or West Coast weddings cost a lot. So,
yeah. OG.
Yeah. Just combine it with other things. I mean, my personal pet peeve about weddings is when people put them on holiday weekends. You know, because everybody's going to be traveling anyway, and that's their excuse. And I just kind of go like, yeah, but I want to do my own thing on Memorial Day. I don't want to go do your thing. Why do I have to do your thing? Make your thing the next weekend, and then I'll have two weekends off. Come on, be a pal. But Joe's looking at me like, damn, you're self-centered.
No, I feel the same. I feel exactly the same.
Good. Yeah, good. Yeah. You know, you got to have your day, but there's 4,000 different ways to get to wherever you want to go. And like you said, you know, when you're traveling, if you can combine it with other stuff, you can make another trip out of it, or a work trip, or go see customers, or, you know, some other way that can kind of help offset a little of the cost. I don't like the, you know, in the article it says, take a bus for $5. That might be a bridge too far for OG, but
there was a time then though, when I was right out of college, we're taking the bus would have been a great idea.
Oh, same from Virginia to New York City. We did that. I can't even imagine doing that now.
No, but it was, but then it was just an adventure. I don't know about for you. It was
an adventure. It
was pretty fun. Yeah. Last thoughts, biggest takeaway for our Stacker family when it comes to weddings. We'll let our guest of honor have the last word. So, G, you want to go first?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. It's okay to say no. It's okay to say you can't make it. If it's too expensive, it's okay to do something a little different. Like Al said, change the location where you guys are going to stay, or see if you can share rooms or whatever. There's just because there's the room booked at the Four Seasons doesn't mean that you have to participate in that. And if it doesn't work budget wise, it doesn't work. Nobody's going to remember who's there anyway. I mean, ask any of us. You know, I've been married 20 years, Joe 30, you know, Len 25, L, you said 15. Can you name whether or not Aunt So and Who's it was at your wedding affirmatively? You're like, no, I think she was there. I'm pretty sure she was, but I don't know. Do you care? Probably not. So do whatever you can to support the couple. And sometimes, you know, you're supporting them from afar.
Mr. Penzo.
I think you guys have nailed everything. I guess all I can say add to that finally is, you know, gifts don't have to be expensive. And if you are going to get a gift and you don't want to make it and you're going to buy something, just don't buy Mr. T.
And L.
I would just say this is a celebration of love, and you wish best, you know, for your friends or family members. So if you can make it, definitely go for it. But if you can't, you can still, like OG pointed out, just you can still send a gift, send a note, send something personal. No need to make it a cause of stress. It should be a celebration of joy.
We're super excited to be part of this promotion. One United Bank is sponsoring their 11th annual financial literacy contest, and it's for youth between the ages of 8 and 12. They have to, well, you know what? We're going to talk to Terry Williams from One United Bank about how it all works, because Terry's got all the scoop for you. So if you know any kids in the community that are between 8 and 12 years old, we're going to help them maybe at the very most win this contest, but at the very least learn a little bit about financial literacy, which is great if they win or not. I think everybody wins when kids know borrow about money. So let's say hi to Terry Williams from One United Bank. One United Bank, the nation's largest Black-owned bank, just opened their 11th annual I Got Bank contest. 10 children are going to win a $1,000 savings account in efforts to support families who are homeschooling their children due to the coronavirus pandemic. Here to explain how it works, walking down the stairs to the basement right now, what your child may need to do is Terry Williams, One United Bank president. How are you, Terry?
I'm great, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm so happy that you would stop by on the One United Bank world tour for this. Tell me, did this contest really start with you searching for children's books? Is that how it started?
Yes. So we had this Adopt a School program. So first of all, One United Bank, we're a digital bank, but we also have branches in Boston, Miami, and LA. And in those cities, we adopt schools and go to the schools to educate kids about money. And so we were looking for books to use, you know, as part of that educational process. And we couldn't find any books that really spoke to an urban community. I mean, we found a lot of books that had to do with white picket fences and lemonade stands out in the suburbs, but there wasn't anything that really dealt with sort of being in an urban environment and some of the issues that our children are confronted with. So I said, okay, well, let me just, you know, write this little pamphlet. And I started writing this pamphlet, and the character, which is Jazz Ellington, this 10-year-old boy, really started to speak to me and just said, oh, no, this is, you got to write more. And what started as a pamphlet ended up turning into a book. And I have to say, I'm glad I wrote it because it covers everything from credit scores to check systems records to money laundering to check cashers, you know, the type of things that, you know, sort of our community is confronted with. You know, why is there a check cashier on every corner and no banks? Or, you know, why is it that, and this is typical, you know, sort of African-American families, there's, you know, there may be one person that seems to have a little bit of money, and then there are other people that don't and expect that one person to save them, you know. Yeah. So there's a lot of that that goes on that was needed in terms of a story. And I made it entertaining and fun. But anyway, so that book ended up turning into a contest. We started this contest 11 years ago. I can't believe it's been that long. It's for kids from 8 to 12 years old. We asked them to either read my book or any book on money. And then we started as an essay contest, but then we expanded it to include art. I'm so glad we did.
I thought that was
great. Express, you know.
By the way, Terry, I've never seen that from a bank. Art being included in this, I thought was really neat. Different ways people can express themselves.
Exactly. Exactly. In fact, I think this year, out of the 10 winners, at least 5 of them are art, even though we didn't plan for it that way. But we say express how you would use the lessons that you learned from the book to help yourself and your family. And the stories that kids tell have just been amazing over the years. So we choose 10 winners, but I actually feel like every child that participates is a winner. I mean, 10 winners get a $1,000 savings account. But I can tell you all the kids that read a book and write about it or do an art project really have a different relationship with money after that point. The parents tell us that. They start asking them questions like, what are you doing with your money? And, you know, do you have a savings account? And, you know, do we own this home? And, you know, what's a mortgage payment? What's your mortgage payment? You know,
I can see mom starting to sweat a little bit.
No, the kids become forever changed. So it's just a wonderful contest. And I also have seen our community grow, you know, not just from this contest, but we've just been focusing on wealth building and generational wealth building. I always say, you know, sort of historically, our community has raised our kids to one day take care of us. And we're now changing that mindset to what are we going to leave for our children? And that's a very different mindset. And so I'm glad that the kids in participating in this contest are starting to ask their parents questions. And I hope that our parents are that, you know, our customers actually, which are the parents, start thinking about, you know, money differently.
I have so many questions. I think I'm going to start with the big cerebral question first and work down to some technical questions, Terry. But we've spoken with John Hope Ryan about people being unbanked. We've spoken with Tiffany Alice, the Budgetnista, who I know is going to be at a conference you're holding. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We've been a part of the Federal Reserve a program to help people get banked. Why are so many people unbanked still today?
Yeah, no, it is a challenge that we also accept. What we have found is 30% of our community has a check systems record. Now, a lot of your, you know, listeners probably don't even know what check systems is. We know about credit scores. We know about credit agencies, you know, Experian, TransUnion, but we've never heard of check systems. Check systems is also a credit agency that reports on whether or not you use your bank account responsibly. So if your bank account is closed because of an overdraft, you have a check systems record and you are no longer able to open a bank account with any bank. We have something called a second chance checking account that will allow you to open an account with us to give you a second chance, but most banks don't, and you will be, you know, I hate to say it, but sort of banned from banking. So that's, and because our community doesn't know that this thing exists, and we're not educated about that, you know, we tend to hit that wall. The second is that there has actually been a historical not good relationship between banks and the Black community. And systemic racism is real. I mean, banks financed the slave trade. You know, banks redlined our community. You know, so there's been a lot of mistrust of banks. And we're working to overcome that, you know, first of all, by the whole Bank Black movement and saying you can bank with a Black bank, but also by recognizing that it's not just about a bank account. You know, it is about how we're teaching our kids. It is about, you know, how we're focusing on wealth building, even for services that we don't offer as a bank. You know, we talk about how you need to have life insurance. You need to have a will. You know, these are things that we don't offer, but are important in the wealth building journey. So, you know, it's really being authentic and really expressing the journey of money in a different way is how we're getting our community to sort of trust in banks and come back to the banking industry.
I noticed the way that you guys charge fees is also different. I feel like a lot of the time the banking fee system is built on the backs of people that can't afford these high fees. I remember I really struggled with money in my early 20s, and man, the fees that Bank of America socked to me, Terry, were just outrageous. And those were going to perks to people that really didn't care about the perks, I felt like.
Yeah. No, it's sort of interesting. I had that experience when my niece came to stay with me and she opened up an account with a large bank and got hit with, you know, $700 in fees. And I was just like, how could that be? You know? So yes, we are very conscious of fees and doing things to make our products affordable. And then we also strive to help our community understand how to avoid fees. Part of our mission is to respect people regardless of their account balance. And we say that explicitly because in banking, it tends to be that the more money you have, the more respect you're given.
Right.
Our view is really just the opposite, to respect the human being, you know, regardless of their account balance, and try to figure out ways to help them, you know, on their journey.
Well, that's the big society question, Terry. So we'll put that aside now and go to the tactical question. This feels to me, and you alluded to this earlier, to be a great opportunity for mom or dad to work with kids on money. What are some best practices you've seen parents use with kids besides this contest and teaching them about money?
So, you know, and I'm glad you asked that because it is part of the book and it is something that I talk to mom and dads about, which is that, you know, an allowance is important and giving kids the opportunity to have a, you know, limited amount of money. I don't care if it's a dollar or $10 a week or, you know, in the book, it talks about getting an allowance the same as your age. So if you're 5, you get $5 a week. If you're 10, you get $10 a week. You know, if you're 16, you get $16 a week. But having an allowance really helps kids focus on money and focus on how to use money. Today, you know, money isn't as visible as it was when we were growing up. You know, then you actually got cash. And I remember getting an allowance and going into a store with my little, you know, $5. But today money can be somewhat invisible, you know, because everything is electronic. So I do recommend that kids are given an allowance and that it becomes more visible to them. And then the second is to set up some sort of automatic savings plan. And I say this for the kids as well as for the adults. You know, one of the things, probably the biggest thing I learned as I went on my money journey is that if money went into my pocket, I was more likely to spend it. And so having some money put away automatically really, really makes a difference in terms of being able to save. And to be honest, I don't miss it in my pocket, you know, because it happens automatically. So those are the two lessons. And in fact, in the book, Jazz, who's this 10-year-old that has saved $2,000, it's because he got an allowance and the allowance went automatically into his savings account. You know, I use that story to really preach that message. The third thing I would say for families is to, and I know, you know, sort of interesting looking at your studio in the basement, that, you know, look around your home because it is a reflection of your values. kids sort of take in those kind of messages. So yeah, get some pictures up about money, or get a vision board up of where you want to go. But, you know, recognize that kids are visual and they're going to see things that really should speak to what you want them to see in their lives.
Well, and I love that too, because money is not like it was when you and I were growing up, when you talked about having cash. I mean, I remember my twins, Terry, asking when I told them we didn't have any money, said, well, why don't you take the card and go over to the machine? Because that machine spits out money over there, Dad. I don't know if you know that. That is the money spitter. We need more of that.
Right. Yeah, no, it is a new world, but it's, you know, there are benefits to it. And that's why I say the automatic savings, because, you know, we used to have to go in with our passbook and, you know, put money into our savings account, and, you know, making that trip to the bank was helpful. But now that type of thing could be done automatically. I guarantee you, if you set it up, you won't miss the money. And then you'll look up one day and be like, oh, wow, I have money, you know, in my savings. You know, with this pandemic, I think those lessons have become even more important to us as a community, that we need to have some money put aside. Yeah. Those are the lessons that I would share with parents. And maybe, you know, the other one is somewhat self-serving, to participate in the contest. But it's also to start to educate our kids about money at a young age. It is important for us to have those money conversations as early as possible, because then it becomes a part of their lives. You know, the other thing that I would say that's different about when we were growing up is I remember, you know, my parents sitting at the kitchen table writing checks,
yeah,
you know, to pay bills.
Right. Bill night. Right. Yeah.
And now it's all done electronically. So it'll be a different experience with our kids today than it was when we were growing up, but it's still the same lessons, you know, saving, paying bills, trying to be purposeful with your money are all important lessons for kids to learn.
That's fabulous. I've got three places we need to send people. I usually like to have one, but first is for the contest. Where do we send people if they'd like to participate?
So for the contest, it's oneunited.com. That's O-N-E, united.com/book. And then it's the contest, but you can also download my book for free. And it's a fun read. It'll take you like 30 minutes, that hour to read. But it's a great book for kids. It's a chapter book for kids.
I thought it was so fun. It was so great. My kids are 25. By the way, the art, who did the art?
Yeah, so interesting. The artist for the book is different than the art that you see behind, you know, at One United Bank. But it is an artist, Adonis Parker, in Miami, and he does a lot of art that you'll see at the bank.
He did just a great job too there. It just makes the stories come alive and really fun. Well, that answered my second question, which was the book. So you can also get the book there as well. And then on a whole different topic, that's great for kids. I just want to bring this up just for moms and dads out there. You've got a fantastic conference coming up as well for the adults listening.
Yes. And we're very excited about it. So it's called the One Transaction Financial Conference. It's being held on Juneteenth, which is a holiday that celebrates the emancipation of Black America. And it's June 19th, which is a Saturday. It's from 1 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's a conference to, first of all, it is fabulous. It has great presenters, including Damon John from Shark Tank, Tiffany Haddish, the actress, and you mentioned Tiffany
the budgetista. Yeah, she'll be there.
Yeah, she's fabulous.
I also think my friend Chris Browning from Popcorn Finance will be speaking there as well. Yeah.
Yes, Chris Browning. He's going to talk about building your credit score. So we have like a great series of presenters that are going to give all kinds of tips about money. And we call it the One Transaction Conference because we're trying to get the Black community to focus on the one transaction that will close the wealth gap for your family. So, you know, the wealth gap is just, you know, as background, you know, white America has about $171,000 in net worth. Black America has 17,000.
Yeah.
So that's a gap. Some would say a huge gap. But for us, as we have tried to get our community to focus on this gap, it really is one transaction. Like if you buy a home, you know, over time that would close that gap. You know, if you had a profitable business, you know, if you had a if you started savings and investments, you know, the younger, the better, you could close that gap for your family. So we're asking our community to claim your one in 2021 and to focus on the one transaction that could make a difference for your family. And that conference is free. And it's really just been fabulous to put it together. It is one of those experiences where you have all these brilliant minds all in one place that are really focused on educating our community and are available, you know, past the conference. So you get to meet them if you haven't met them. A lot of them have great followings, but you get to meet them at the conference. And then for some of them, like Tiffany, the Budgetista, or Chris Browning, you get to follow them after the conference.
It's so powerful. It's funny because I'm starting to see concert lineups come out for these outdoor concerts again. This feels like rock stars, like finance rock stars all in one place. Like you guys are having your own money concert.
Yeah. Well, now you're giving me an idea. Maybe we should have an outdoor financial literacy conference.
How fun would that be?
Yeah. How fun would that be? Right.
So great.
Lessons and some music. I mean, that would be fabulous. You're giving me ideas.
Anything I can do to help, Terry. Well, thank you so much for helping us. And by the way, I'll link to both the conference and the contest, the fantastic contest for kids, on our show notes page at stackybenjamins.com. Thanks for hanging out and talking financial literacy, the wealth gap, and us all working together, man.
Well, thank you for having me. This is fabulous.
Hey, Stackers, I'm your pal, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and sorry if I seem rushed, but with Memorial Day almost upon us, you all know what that means, right? Seriously, you remember, right? I've only been talking about my carnival, the World Texarkana Fair, or the WTF, as I affectionately refer to it, all week long. Still waiting for your RSVPs. You know, but hey, fashionably late is cool too, I suppose. You know, there's a ton of setting up still to do, but you know old Doug, I'm a planner extraordinaire who should probably write a book about how all this goes down. I mean, the key here, grasshoppers, is what I call delegation. I just put the word out, click my fingers, and man, oh man, has the neighborhood come through. People are dropping off their kids to help me, and it appears some can stay for hours. This is fantastic. Well, I need to put the finishing touches on helping Sarah and Jose set up the Bobbing for Donuts stand, so let's get to today's trivia. Since today happens to be National Brisket Day, what is the heaviest bull ever recorded? I'll be back with your answer, which is totally unbelievable, in just a moment. I swear, I'm a ninja with the language, people. A true wordsmith.
Somebody loves his ability with the words way, way too much. Hey, if you're brand new here, you do not know that we're having year-long competition between our three regular contributors, Len, Paula, and OG. And today, Paula has the day off, and L, you're playing the part of Paula Pant.
Hey.
Yes. And L, there is some, I don't know if you want the good news or the bad news. The good news is, well, why don't you, do you want the good news or the bad news?
I always like the bad news first.
Okay. You're tied for last. So that's the bad news.
I feel like that's good news.
Well, the good news is because you're tied with the reigning champion, Mr. Len Penzo, two-time reigning champion, you get to go last. And Len, you'll go second. You've got six, L, and Len's got six. OG is so ahead with eight. Too? Yes. Sorry.
Ooh, okay.
Yes. Yeah. OG has...
OG's running away with this now. This is getting
hold
serious.
Ahead. But here on Memorial Day weekend, let's do some bull trivia. So, OG, you're kicking this thing off. Biggest bull ever recorded.
It would be helpful at heaviest. This moment to know what the average bull is. That would be an important fact to know. Is that disclosable? Or
I have no idea.
Not in the
did
trivia.
Did not hear.
Okay.
That.
So I'm going to say that I kind of feel like 2,000 pounds is a good starting number. A ton. It's a pretty heavy thing, right? Like, is a dump truck at the 2,000 pounds? Anybody know? As bulls, they're not as big as dump trucks, but they might be as heavy. They're a little sturdier. So I'm going to go north of that. I'm going to say, this is a shot in the dark, 3,148 pounds.
He sets the bar at 3,148. Len?
You know, this is funny because I was looking at some chat board today, and they were talking about, you know, having to save money, or food prices are going up. And they were talking about, why don't you just go in with your neighbors and buy a whole beef, buy a whole beef, you know, just get everybody together. And the only number it irritates. The only thing I can remember, and I'm not even sure I remember this anymore. I think it said a hind quarter. They called it the hind quarter, and there was a list of cuts of meat. And I think that was only 160 pounds. Just there was all kinds of options. You could just get the. So if a hind quarter is 160 pounds, that just means the leg area. I don't know. I'm not a butcher, but let's say that's 500 pounds just on the legs. And I don't know what. I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about. Would you say 3,000 pounds? That seems way too much. I'm going to say 2,200 pounds.
2,200. Well, L, there's a big difference between those two numbers. So what are you thinking?
$1. Oh, sorry. I thought it was in Prices Right. Let's see. If you say a hind quarter is like 160 pounds, I'm going to do the quarter. That's 720. So I would say, what did you say, Len? I'm going to go closer to Len, but
2,200.
22. Okay. I'm going to say 1,300.
You're going to 1,300 pounds.
Yeah.
All right. L's got the bottom end of that. OG up there on the top. Len, everybody's got a little room here. We'd love to tell you who's right, but we don't play that way. We will be right back. It's Military Appreciation Month, and I want to share appreciation for one of our stackers I met in Cleveland for the second time. Keith. Keith just drove his car off the road. But Keith, a proud military member, I enjoyed seeing Keith. And you know what? Eric was there too, who was in the Marines. But both of these fine gentlemen served our country that I met in Cleveland. I want to give a shout out to them. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just Keith and Eric, but all their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. They offer 24/7 help from their U.S.-based member service centers. They offer resources like Best Cities After Service to help veterans transition to civilian life and Best Careers for Military Spouses to support our military families. All branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families are eligible for Navy Federal membership. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate this month, and you'll see all of our Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they can also be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. Oh, God. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right. U.S. Cellular, a company that sells phones, wants us to put down our phones and to see what we find. Learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus. OG set the bar at 3148. Nobody wants anything to do with that, brother.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they're over a ton. I don't know why.
Might have overshot, but we'll see. Len, you're at 2,200 pounds. Feeling good?
I don't know. I will say this. I feel much better than I did last week. So I think I have the best chance here out of everybody.
Biggest bull on record. And now 1,300 pounds for the biggest bull on record.
I'm literally going off of what Len says. So now I'm feeling kind of shaky.
She was hoping Len was a little more positive.
I'm pretty sure, Ella, that was 160 pounds for, they called it the hind quarter, which I don't know what that meant, but.
Well, let's.
Exactly what this is all about, but I have this number in my brain, so I'm going to go with it.
Right. Doug, these guys got numbers in their brain, but what's the real number?
Carnival fans. I'm the ringleader of the world famous WTF, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. So, you know how I told you that some of the neighbors were coming over to set up the carnival? Well, I'm not sure this is actually the treasure of an idea that I'd imagine. Because most of these ankle biters are just running around playing tag. Worse yet, they're filling up all the holes I've been so painstakingly digging for the tents. And two of these brats are over there right now eating all the cake pops. Hey, Serena, you're eating my damn profit margin. I'm starting to think these parents just left their kids here for me to babysit them. Oh, my God. Well, hey, Doug, little Jimmy can stay till 4 when I get off work. Oh, hey, Doug, little Susie can hang out for an hour or so while I go run some errands. Oh, Doug, here's the formula and diapers for the baby. Her nap time's at 2:30. Well, I'll tell you what, all of this is going to be chapter 3 in my new management book. Talk about some bull. Wow. All right, let's get you your trivia, shall we? Obviously, beef is big business. The industry contributes approximately $894 billion in total to the U.S. economy, or just under 6% of total U.S. GDP. So what's the biggest bull on record? A Chianina bull named Donetto holds the world record for the heaviest bull, reported by one source as 3,920 pounds and 6 feet 1 inches tall when exhibited at the Arezzo, Italy show in 1955. Now that is a lot of brisket. I gotta go before these kids destroy my entire f***ing carnival. See ya!
Oh, wow. My God.
Seriously?
That is crazy.
Almost okay. 4,000 pounds.
Almost two dump trucks.
Wow.
You can see, Len, that OG wants to avoid that last second needing to play for the win in mid-December moment that you guys had, the moment of protest.
Yes.
It's a long season. We're not even halfway through this year, so there's plenty of time. There's plenty of time. No panic.
Oh gee.
Well, now I have some trivia when people come over to share.
Did you know? That'll
look absolutely crazy. That is crazy.
Then I'm going to feed them some false information like Len did me with the hindquarter. By the way, you know, I don't know for sure, but I heard from a friend of mine.
Let's just do a little smoke.
Now, L, I think that was accurate. Remember this, that was the record. That was from one source. That's almost like, you know, one. So that sounds like an old wives' tale almost.
What, from 1955? One source?
Yeah, one source from 1955.
Probably true. Like all Doug's trivia. Hey, today we are doing, this is going to be the Stacker Help segment. If you want help with your money lessons and you want to get those via email and every Monday, Wednesday, you want to get a guide to our show ahead of time, which includes lots of extras like the rules that OG and I talk about, more information about the guests that we talk about, all the links. Of course, we have the show notes, which are a little less, but if you want more of the Stacking Benjamins experience, stackingbenjamins.com/stacker to get all that. And that will sign you up for money lessons and our show guide. Today we're answering a letter that we got from John, and this is more of a comment than a question, but I thought that it was something I really wanted to ask you guys about. John said, listening to our show May 13th, OG and I were talking about cryptocurrency, and OG posited a fictional conversation. OG said, yeah, I bought $100 this coin and now it's worth $6,000. And then John says, and darn it, if I didn't have the exact same conversation with my millennial son just the previous evening. He bought $200 of Dogecoin a couple weeks prior and saw it go up to $3,000 and then down to $1,000. So my son has, quote, diversified into three other cryptocurrencies. I told him I have a concern in that I doubt cryptocurrency is an investment. My definition of investing is putting your money to work, earning more money at a reasonable rate of return, usually via purchasing an asset for which I have reasonable confidence the asset should go up in value. With cash in the bank, a reasonable rate of return might be 1 or 2%, lately, 0.5%. For bonds, a reasonable return might be 3, 4, or 5 per year. For stocks, a reasonable rate of return might average 8, 9, or 10 per year, but only if an investor holds their stocks or a stock fund for a long period of time, more than 10 years. When they average out all the ups and downs of 15 or 20 or 30 years in the stock market, they should expect average returns from 8 to 10 per year. Problem with cryptocurrency is I do not know what its reasonable rate of return would be. Maybe in a decade or two, might start to get an idea if there is a reasonable rate of return for crypto. Right now, however, people are salivating with unreasonable hope they will win super high returns from crypto. That's speculating. And then in all capitals, he writes, gambling. They're not investing. Keep up the great work. Thanks for that note, John. And it's funny because I think everybody right now knows somebody who won the crypto lottery, right? Got tons of money doing crypto. But let's talk about crypto as an investment. Our friend Andy Hill did a whole Marriage, Kids, and Money podcast where all he talked about was crypto just about a week and a half ago. And we'll link to that in our show notes if you want to listen to that episode. Guys, what do you think about crypto and investing? L, let's have our guest of honor go first.
So far, the conversations I'm seeing in my Facebook stream, people emailing me, even my friends and family, I don't put the two together the way they're talking about crypto. And I actually do have Bitcoin, probably dating myself. Years ago, I got it. And I was preparing for a future episode. And I thought, I think I have a wallet with some Bitcoin. Turns out I do. And long story short, I'm going on an adventure to see if I can get that money because right now I can't. And I'm sitting on $500.
Why can't you get it?
Two things. So I had a wallet with Mt. Gox, which is gone.
Oh, yeah.
That's gone. And another provider, which appears to have been bought out by a German bank. And I cannot qualify with my identification and my phone number being American to get access to it. And I don't have the key for my particular wallet. I use that account for the access. So yeah, it's about, I guess today, about $500 worth of Bitcoin, like a fraction of 0.5% or something like that.
How much money do you remember how much you put into it?
You know what? I got paid and it was like back then they had not TaskRabbit, but it was one of those, I was doing an experiment, you know, paying down debt, finding fun ways to make money. And they paid you in like Bitcoin, like fractions of slivers of Bitcoin. So I totally forgot about it, but that's how I see it. I don't see it as part of my investments. Like I wouldn't include it in my net worth. I understand. And I think the technology is fascinating, but 99% of the people I'm talking to aren't interested in the technology. A lot of them can't explain it, how it works.
It just goes up.
They're interested in the fast return. Yeah, they're interested in how quick they can get their money to grow. And so I'm going to agree with John here. I don't think it's actual investing. I think it's speculating. It's just the next GameStop.
Len?
Yeah, I totally agree. It's speculation. That's all it is. Call it investments crazy. And you know, that's fine. If you're going to speculate and make money, that's great. That doesn't mean that it's an investment. Things can go down. The reason I see it as speculation, one, it hasn't been around long enough. And there's so many of them out there. And there's like a mania with it right now. There are so many people are jumping and everybody's talking about it. Everybody's talking about it. If you want to speculate, that's fine. I speculate in certain things as well. It's fine to speculate. I wouldn't, you know, put a very small portion of your fun money towards. There's nothing wrong with that. But to think of it as an investment, you're playing with fire.
You seem like a guy, Len, that as a currency would like the idea of crypto.
Well, if it behaved as a currency, it really doesn't behave. I mean, it's very hard to spend it. It's right. There's not many places you can use it. So, we can talk about this all. I can talk for an hour about cryptocurrencies and why I think they're not useful as a currency or as a store of value. They've been very good. They've been very good as a speculative play for the last few years. You can't knock people who have gone out on a limb and done it.
Charlie Munger agrees with you about it not being a good store of value, not a good place to have money. But you don't think that having this decentralized currency idea is better? And I mean, we're seeing JP Morgan put some money in it. We're seeing Goldman Sachs. I don't know that they're looking at it as an investment as much as they're looking at it as diversifying away from a fiat currency.
Well, okay, you're diversifying as a, I mean, we can get into this technically, but I mean, the problem, Bitcoin's main problem is it is monetized or it is valued in terms of the very fiat currency you're trying to get away from. And you, people can say, well, gold and silver are the same. That's not true because gold and silver are, they can be valued in terms of themselves. They are self-referential. They are elements on the periodic table. So you can value things in terms of weight of gold and silver. They're tangible. Bitcoin and all cryptocurrencies are not tangible items. And just as a quick thought experiment, I tell my readers all the time, let's say the dollar, is some disaster strikes and the dollar, the value of the dollar goes to zero. What would that mean for Bitcoin? Bitcoin, that would mean Bitcoin would be worth infinity dollars. Now, infinity is a huge number, but it's also an impractical number and you can't use it for any transactions. Whereas gold or silver, if the dollar goes to zero, we always know that a loaf of bread is worth the amount of silver in a, for example, a U.S. dime, pre-1965 U.S. dime. You can always buy a gallon of gas for the amount of silver in a pre-1965 quarter or a pound of chicken in terms of weight. So that can always, it's always in terms of weight. So you can always fall back on gold and silver. And that's why central banks have gold. They don't hold Bitcoin. They don't hold anything like that. There's a reason for that. So, I mean, it's a fascinating topic. I could talk about this all day, but yes, that those are my thoughts.
No,
yeah, I think it's fascinating.
Yeah.
I think the technology is fascinating. I think the people making a ton of money are the scalpers with the graphics cards. My husband's into computers and programming, and he can't get the card because it's supposed to be on sale for $800. Scalpers are buying them with bots and then selling them to crypto miners for $1,600. You know, so they're making some money on that.
I wanted to build my last computer because I thought it would just be fun, kind of like Len with his train set. I haven't built a computer in a long time, so I wanted to do that. It was way cheaper, way, way, way cheaper for me to buy one from Dell. Because of the fact that the graphics cards are marked up unbelievably and I couldn't get one. I was looking at an Xbox. New Xbox is $500. They're selling them on Walmart.com for $1,000 and they're calling it a bundle, but it's not a bundle. It doesn't come with anything except for the Xbox. And they said that that's not going to go away until late this year. Intel's saying that for PS5s, it's going to be next year. So
wow,
it's crazy. The chip problem. And by the way, look at me. I'm complaining about not being able to get an Xbox and building a computer. But think about the real stuff here, like medical devices, right?
Yeah.
Where they need that technology. I mean, oh, poor Joe can't do his Xbox.
Well, vehicles too. I mean, real things that we all use, like Ford has tons of their trucks sitting, just they can't even sell them because they're missing the chips.
I drove by the Kentucky Speedway a few weeks ago and had no idea. If you're driving by that highway, I think it's 71, and you look at the parking lot for the Kentucky Speedway, it is all, Len, it's all trucks. And I thought, wow, trucks aren't selling. And then I read that article that said that these trucks have everything in it except the chip.
Exactly. Just isn't that amazing? Yeah.
Sitting there waiting for the electronics. OG, how about you? Crypto?
Well, the only thing that I'll add to this is, despite whether we think it's an investment or not, the IRS certainly does think it is. So all the day trading that you're doing in your crypto and Dogecoin and Shiba coin and Shiba coin and your F Elon Musk coin and whatever, you know, whatever else you are feeling like trading on, there's one little box that's on your tax returns now that says, do you own or did you own or trade any virtual currency within the last tax year? And it's a really innocuous little box. There's just a yes or no question. And if you answer no, and then you find out, and then the G finds out that you did, well, guess what? Major problems. If you mark yes, now what do you have to do? Now you got to recreate all of those documents because most of these companies are not providing statements at the end of the year going, hey, by the way, you bought and sold all this stuff. Here's all your outcomes. And don't forget, some of this stuff is wash sales and all this other sort of, you have to figure that out all on your own. So I don't know that it's an investment. I don't know. I should say I'm pretty confident to say it's not an investment, speculation for sure. But the IRS does think it's an investment.
But right there is the problem, because the IRS says that it's an investment, not a currency, right? So when I buy a sandwich with it, I'll have to pay capital gains tax on the sandwich or take the loss depending on when I bought it. But on the other side, the SEC says, hey, we can't regulate it because it's a currency. It's not an investment. So you end up with all of these shysters and people getting ripped off, and the Mt. Gox thing as an example. Mm-hmm. You end up with all of these different crazy things in the wild, wild west, because the SEC says, not me. And the IRS says, not a currency. Like, what? It isn't a currency and it's not an investment according to the US government. So what the hell is it? I'm with you, Al. I'm fascinated by it as a currency. I'm fascinated by it. But to Len's point, how the hell can I buy anything with it when it's gyrating all over the place? Like, even if I'm comparing the yen against the dollar, right? Mm-hmm. Those will shift so much less. I lived on the Canadian border. It was always fun to go to Canada. And sometimes you had a lot of money. Sometimes you didn't have that much money when you crossed, just looking at how those, but nothing like this. Like, where do we go with it? I don't know.
Yeah. I had this conversation with someone. Where are you using it? And in this case, someone, you know, was asking about, should I put this as part of my retirement plan? I'm like, no. Can you explain? Do you understand the technology behind it? You don't have to be an expert in everything, but if you're going to invest money, if you're going to invest a considerable part of your money, you should understand the concepts, the ideas well enough to explain it to someone else before you're getting in on that.
Yeah, the investment portion, L, is actually the technology itself, which is blockchain technology. If you want to call it investment, invest in companies that are making good use of blockchain technology. That's the difference between investing and speculating.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's a good place to leave it. John, thanks for the note. And that drove a nice conversation about crypto and the state of crypto. It'll be interesting to see what happens next, because, man, if you're ever bored, just go pay attention to the news about crypto. Elon Musk says one thing, and a couple of weeks ago, Dogecoin hit the floor when he talked about it on SNL. And then the next week, he talked about Bitcoin, and that went down. Apparently, now the market thinks if Elon Musk is talking about it, we're selling. I don't know. Where before, wasn't it we were buying? If Elon, I don't know. It's like I feel like they changed the dress code. All right, that's going to do it for today, guys. Hey, let's talk about what's happening where you are. Let's find out first. OG, what are you doing for the long Memorial Day weekend, my friend?
Well, the biggest thing around here is kids are finally out of school. So that's super awesome. My daughter's got her fifth birthday, which is second awesome. And then we're going to a wedding reception, you know, because it's Memorial Day weekend.
Of course. That's awesome. And, you know, we'll let our guest of honor go last. So, Mr. Penzo, what's happening at LenPenzo.com?
Yeah, well, I already mentioned it, but the seven modest wedding gifts that I'm still enjoying, and the honeybee, 25 years later, it really is a popular post. It's been around a while. I originally did it when we were married 20 years, and since in May, here middle of May was our 25th, I just pulled it back out, and so that's interesting. And hey, if you are interested in macroeconomics, every Saturday we have what we call Black Coffee at Len Penzo, where we discuss all things macroeconomics. So you want to talk about cryptocurrencies, what have you, that's when we do it. So and that's LenPenzo.com.
Find all that at LenPenzo.com. I can't wait to read exactly what those things are and compare notes. Al, thanks so much for hanging out with us, my friend.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I'm like you guys, I'm gearing up for summer. I just started the podcast up again. We were talking about this is the year of a little bit of uncertainty. We want to travel. How do you find some safe options just in case things change again? So I discussed that with Karen Corderay, which was a lot of fun. And then we're celebrating this upcoming month, fourth anniversary of Jumpstart Your Marriage and Your Money. So speaking of wedding gifts, if you want success for your friends that are getting married, include that in your gift.
Oh, cool. And that is all where finer podcasts are sold or distributed.
Not at Mt. Gox.
Yes, probably.
So just wanted to find that out.
Yes. And by the way, Karen Cordaway is a ton of fun. She has a new podcast as well. That's a lot of fun about going to get your bucket list. Good stuff.
Yeah. There. A lot of travel tips.
Yes, absolutely. All right. That's going to do it for today. Doug, you got it from here, man. What should we have learned today?
So what should we have learned today? First, take a lesson from our roundtable discussion. Traveling to a wedding doesn't have to break the bank. You don't need to buy a new wardrobe, or even being just slightly flexible on travel can save you oodles of money. Second, how about working with neighborhood kids on a literacy competition? While you may or may not win, we all win when the kids know more about money. But the big lesson? I'm not your babysitter, people. Watch your own kids. Now I've got to go clean up whatever they've done to the pin the tail game. No, we're not pinning the tail on OG. Wait a minute. On second thought, that is a great idea, Serena. These kids about to learn a lesson they ain't never gonna forget. To learn more about our guests and for more resources, you can head to our show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. To learn more from El Martinez, tune in to the Couple Money Podcast. And to see what Len Penzo is up to, just head on over to lenpenzo.com. For more on Terry Williams and One United Bank's I Got Bank Financial Literacy Contest, head to oneunited.com/book or head to our show notes page. You'll also find a link for their upcoming conference as well. This show is created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Karen Rapine, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I really thought doing these credits completely naked would have been a lot more fun than it actually was. SB Podcast may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remunerations. That's a big word. There's no way you take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial decisions, consult with a real financial advisor.
I don't know, Len, if you like peanut butter or not. These are Kodiak peanut butter granola bars.
Mm.
Wow. 10 grams of protein. Wow, it doesn't negate the 220 calories, but, you know.
Do you like Cheetos?
I do love Cheetos, actually. Do you like the white cheddar Cheetos?
Ooh. Zero grams of protein.
I don't like the white cheddar Cheez-Its either.
I'm waiting to see exactly what you're... Like, how are you going to suck down? Like, how are you going to suck down Cheetos while we're recording a podcast?
If you see me on mute,
it's going to be orange by the end.
It will be. No, and the end of his microphone is all orange. Well, this show's over, Stackers, but you know what? It's Military Appreciation Month, and that means that we've got time still for a shout out to members of our community, members of our family who have served our country. And you know what? Today I want to give a shout out to two of my uncles, my Uncle Henry, who is in the Army. Let's do three. My Uncle Eddie, who is in the Army, and my Uncle Bill, also in the Army. And two of them served in Vietnam. One served in Korea. And a big thanks to all three of my uncles, my dad's brothers who served like he did in the military. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just my uncles, but they want to celebrate their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. Of course, you may be eligible for Navy Federal membership and you don't even know it because it's open to all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families. They're all eligible, and I want to reiterate, and their families. If you have family, like I do, who served in the military, well, then you're eligible for Navy Federal membership. Navy Federal's employees are part of the community they serve, and many of them are military family members, reservists, or veterans. Here during Military Appreciation Month, Stackers, go visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate, and you're going to see all of Navy Federal's Military Appreciation Month offers. So many cool things they're doing for veterans. You'll also see all their other awesome 24/7, 12 months of the year offers. That's NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.